Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
And good morning. I'm Dave Kubikin.
And good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
Jane Marie and I are two of the partners at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every weekend talking about estate planning and Medicaid planning. We have offices in Albany and Kingston and Saratoga, so we kind of serve the Hudson Valley to Capital Region, even the North Country, and really everywhere in New York State and the country and the world, I suppose. And we're here to take your questions, if you have any, at 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-ROW-590. And in the absence of questions, we end up talking about estate planning and wills and trusts and Medicaid and all that stuff. Jay Marie, how are you?
I am well. I'm sorry I left you.
You are well.
I'm sorry I left you hanging last week.
Ben and I had a good time.
We did.
Yeah.
And we had a guest, too. So
we did have a guest.
That's good.
Steve Herwire of Herwire Financial came on to talk specifically about Medicare. Mm-hmm. He got a couple calls. And
he was very good.
He was good. Yep. He's very good at explaining things. And I don't want to say dumbed down, but he dumbs it down pretty darn good. Because I'm confused by Medicare.
Medicare is much more complicated than it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're good at dumbing down other things, though.
I think we are.
I think so, too.
Explaining Medicaid and elder law, right?
Absolutely. And, within any business, I think there are busy times and there are slow times. Perhaps, if you're an accountant, good luck getting out of, and doing anything in March and April. If you're an estate planning attorney, the holidays are kind of the one of the busy seasons. I think the winter in general is extremely busy because, unfortunately, bad things tend to happen to people.
Right.
But I think we're in the time where, right after Thanksgiving, we get the calls, not from the clients, but from the clients' kids, right?
That's right. They had the chance to visit their parents, and maybe they haven't seen them in a few weeks or a few months, perhaps, if they don't live around here. And that's when you see some signs that things may be changing, right?
You got to be proactive, and, it's not, I don't think it's wrong for you to care about your parents and want them to be proactive as well. And there used to be this article, I couldn't find it this morning, but it talks about the different signs to look for when you do go home.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Some of them are, so look in the refrigerator.
Yes, yeah, so tell me about this. I like this. So look in the, what are you looking for?
You're looking to see if they're buying groceries or if it makes sense, right? Or if they're just buying whatever they like, junk food. Yeah. That's not too smart.
Make sure there's food in the fridge and not like the remote control, I suppose.
That too. Make sure the keys aren't in the freezer. And speaking of keys, look at the car. See if there's any scratches or dents on the car.
Back to the fridge. Yeah. So spoiled food, right? Food that's long expired.
That's right.
That's a thing. With the car, yeah, obviously. And depending on how your spouse drives or how your kids drive, they don't need to be necessarily elderly to have marks all over the place on the cars.
You're not referring to my car, are you?
I was not.
No. Well, there was a concrete pillar that came up in the Kingston parking lot.
Out of nowhere.
It just came up out of the blue.
Yeah. Listen, I know that pillar that you're talking about. I've almost hit it a number of times because it's an open parking lot. It's a parking lot, and you don't think there's just a random pillar in the middle of an open parking lot.
No, that's right. Well, I gave that car to my son, and now I pretend he did it.
Well, in addition to car, right, because we're going to talk about when it's maybe not at the best. Well, we're not going to get too into that third rail of when it's
maybe to take the keys away.
Take the keys away.
That's a whole discussion, right? Something else to look at is look at the mail, right?
The mail.
If there's unopened mail, if there's, bills
past due.
Past due bills, that's a sign that they're not keeping up with the checkbook and the finances.
And you bring up a really good point because it's not just someone's physically incapacitated or they have zero capacity at all. When we talk about powers of attorney, and we will get deep into it in a little bit, sometimes it's just you want an agent who can help, and it's that mom's okay in general, but the checkbook's a little much these days, and so you got to look out for those things because you could, there's still, even later in life, it's still important to have good credit and things like that. And
that's right.
Having an agent can really help out. The one that I like is looking to see if there's marks on the walls on the stairwell. Because perhaps they need a little more help stability-wise. I always thought that was very... That's like next level looking
that
for stuff. I never
level.
Even thought of that.
I wouldn't think to look for that. Yeah, that's right.
You don't have any marks on the walls on, by your stairs, do you, Ben?
I do not. No, not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, so I haven't caused any.
Well, at least you have something to look forward to.
That's true. Thank you. That's very nice.
That's so nice.
How about this one? So if mom and dad are hosting Thanksgiving... Mom always hosted Thanksgiving, and she's having trouble remembering the recipe for the if Harry was here, he'd be talking about what Dutch pie or some sort. He usually brings up some sort of recipe.
That's right. I was thinking of our family. Michael's grandmother makes chestnut stuffing that everyone loves.
So if she all of a sudden forgot
like
some of the main ingredients,
right, or she couldn't tell you how to make it, then that would be really alarming, right?
Right. And again, none of this stuff means, okay, it's time to go to a nursing home or anything like that. But the name of the game is being proactive, because we have clients all the time. I know you do that, where they come in and they say, mom was just diagnosed with dementia. And they told us we should talk to someone like you. So we're here. What do we do? And she's still okay.
Right.
But that now's in particular the time to get that clock ticking. And
those are good cases, because they're still early enough that we can do something. And that the parent who was just diagnosed can participate in it. So that's really helpful. We can start to get the documents done.
So, you know, when you go home or you're hosting and relatives are coming over, I'm not saying, you know, don't enjoy the holidays and get a magnifying glass out and start looking for marks and really grill your folks on how they're doing. But it's a really good time. You know, maybe you're not seeing something because you're the local kid.
Right.
And your siblings are now in town, and then they're like, geez, mom really got older. And these are conversations people don't like to have, but they're conversations, I've had them with my, I hope my folks aren't listening, but my brother and I have had conversations.
Yeah, I was just
going
to say the siblings have a time to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Right, about things that they've noticed. And it's very important, as you know, to have the children on the same page.
Well, so that very good segue to, there's an article in the New York Times, I was talking about it last week. There were a bunch of articles that they, you know, on the November 6th, they're just like, boom, here's 10 articles about getting older and planning and things like that. And one of the articles talked about when exactly and how exactly do you insert yourself to help your parents with their money management. And one of the main points of the article was, it's not just you bringing up the topic to your folks and doing it in the right way and making sure they know they still control things, which they would, but it's also making sure that they're getting the same message from the other children as well. So you being on the same page as your siblings, so it's kind of like a united front, because all of a sudden you don't want to be this kid wants to take all my things, and now all of a sudden their estate plans are changing and they're really taking it out on you individually, as opposed to maybe realizing a bigger thing's going on.
Right, you don't want one child saying, oh, you're fine, there's nothing wrong, and then then the other child to see something wrong is looked at as the bad child. Right?
Well, so look, if one of your sons said, mom, dad, you know, you guys are getting up there a little bit, even though you're not, but let's just say, and they said, you know, we really think we should be on your bank account to help you with things, you'd say, get lost.
No way.
Scram.
Yeah. Get away. I write checks.
And even though you're an estate planning attorney, I would bet that if 20 years from now they bring that up, you're probably telling them to still get lost.
Probably. That's just my personality.
So how does someone go about talking to their folks about money, do you think? Like, I don't even know the answer to this, but I'm just thinking.
I think they, you know, either they've seen something coming, or as we have the discussion that it's better to do it now while you still can, before you, down the road, you may not be able to sign the power of attorney, sign a healthcare proxy. You know,
we have kids who are the reason why their folks come in, and they'll, you know, so a client will come in with their adult children, and it's really the adult children that force this to happen. And we only represent the client. The client will be mom and dad. So sometimes they'll get a little interesting, but we're always making sure that our client, mom and dad, that they understand that they still will have control of everything. And this is kind of like, well, we could really avoid guardianships and things like that by just being a little proactive. Or, you know what, let's avoid probate. Let's add your kids to your bank account, and that'll allow the kids to kind of monitor what's going on.
Right. It reminds me of a case I had where the daughters, two daughters lived out of town, and mom, they knew something was up because mom put her house on the market, like kind of just out of the blue.
Really?
So the one daughter flew in and was like, what are you doing? Where are you going? You know, why are you selling the house? And she didn't really have a good answer for that. So then they started looking at the money and everything and realized that mom was not making some good decisions.
So was it like she got something in the mail, like, hey, list your house, because everyone gets that, and
I
she just responded?
She just went to it, like went with a broker who had contacted her, didn't really want to move, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've had clients where their kids find out that, you know, not necessarily giving to some Nigerian prince from an email, but but they're all of a sudden giving to what seems like real charities and real churches and you know, and not small amounts, not $15 in the mail, like $1,500 that they're given. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's a little too late when you realize, you know, $20,000 is gone. It's right. Great to have access to those accounts. So
you can see that when you're home. I mean, because, you know, we get those in the mail all the time and we throw them out younger, you know.
Yeah.
But if it's your parents who are giving away the charities, they'll be like, you know, bags, calendars, address labels. They'll have offers from many other charities that they've given to.
One of the things this article says, it says kind of like what not to do, mm-hmm. is don't tell them they need help with their finances. Don't tell mm-hmm. someone what they, you know, what they're going to do, what they have mm-hmm. to do. You know, it's you want to make sure that they know they have a choice. Or you make them think like they have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so do you need help with everything or just a couple things? Mm-hmm. And so the answer to that is at least help with something.
That's right.
And that's how I get my kid to eat. That's how Jackie eats. It's like, do you want chicken or do you want beef? But guess what? Either option involves food. So I'm covered.
That's good.
You can be our first caller at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. There's a lot going on, Jamie. I know that you've had a couple clients who are looking like they may need a nursing home and significant long-term care. And I was hoping, you know, last week when it was Ben and I, there was some time to talk about a rather involved fact pattern involving, you know, the importance of getting the power of attorney signed. But, you know, ahead of time, I was telling Ben I was in the hospital, mm-hmm. you know, scaring the heck out of someone because I'm there saying, hi, how are you? Sign this.
And they didn't know who you were.
Yeah. Yeah, and we got to become friends and we figured it out. And I thought it would be really helpful if we kind of went through without too many details, kind of what you were seeing when one of these clients came in. So client comes in, was it their kid that came in or was it their spouse that came in with them? And let's, you know, pick whichever one you want.
Yeah, so this is a daughter who came in. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the progression we see. I've been helping the family all along. So it started off where mom couldn't live at home anymore. This is probably 2 years ago.
So was this in 2 years ago, was this in like an existing client that's had other things with us?
Existing client and that had a trust from, 1997.
Oh, my goodness. Well, good for them for being so proactive.
So they're very proactive. So that was great.
That's like right at the beginning of mm-hmm. these trusts.
That's
good
right.
for them. That's great.
Right. So they needed help. Mom had to go to an assisted living. So, and then they had to sell the house. And I'm really glad that they contacted us before they sold the house, because so many times we see people who sell the house and don't put the money back in the trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that messes up the protection of the house and the money subsequently. So because they talked to us, we did the sale of the house. We made sure the funds went into the trust. Now mom's in assisted living. Her income's not very high. So I think two times we had to do partial revocations of the trust.
So let me go back for a second. So creates a trust in the 90s, mm-hmm. puts a house in the trust.
Right.
So the house has long been protected.
Right.
And she can't live at home anymore. So they decide assisted living, which there's nothing wrong with assisted living.
Right.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to private pay.
Right.
Right. And since she's not at home, they say, let's sell the house.
Mm-hmm.
So mom's not, you know, we say you have control. We say you're living at your home, you're paying the bills, but you're not actually selling the house. It's your trust
right.
that
so
sells the house.
The trustee is selling the house. Right.
And so you were just making sure that the when it sells, the proceeds are staying in the trust.
Right.
Because we don't want to unprotect things that are already protected.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And so from time to time, she's taking money out with a partial revocation. I'm playing dumb here a little bit.
Yeah, because assisted living can be pricey. And assisted living is a living situation that isn't often covered by Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
So you usually have to private pay for that.
And so I say to you, well, okay, if she's in assisted living, why are you taking money out twice? Why don't you take a lot of money out once? What's the downside there?
So because, as we know, she may not be in assisted living forever. So if you took out, let's say, all the money.
Let's say you took out $150,000 because you're going to say, all right, next 2 years of assisted living are covered.
Right. And then if she doesn't stay in assisted living and she goes into a nursing home a month after you do that, now she has too much cash.
A lot too much cash.
Yes. Right. Whereas if you're taking out smaller amounts, I think we were doing $25,000, you know, that's going to cover a couple months.
So extra phone call with Jane Marie, but not really a big deal to do that.
People love to talk to me. Yeah.
So, well, yeah. Ben, do you like talking to Jane Marie?
I love talking to Jane Marie.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay.
There we go. Some people like to call
me. At least, one half of the room
two?
Right now likes talking to Jane Marie.
I'll take a 50%.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
In baseball, you'd be making $15
million. At least, you'd be in the Hall of Fame.
Probably.
Jeez. All right.
Well, it's not bad. Well, and if we can bring it back to baseball, it's always a good thing.
That's right.
keep Mookie Betts, Red Sox, please.
I agree.
I'm a Met fan, but keep the, you know, the third best player in baseball. I don't know.
Thank you.
Call me crazy.
Yeah. J.D. Martinez is staying, so I'm happy.
Anywho.
All right. So mom now suddenly, well, as typical, this is like our typical fact pattern. She falls and she breaks her hip.
So it's almost, yeah, it's like central casting.
It's almost like a textbook example, right?
So assisted living, private paying, but comfortable and not a lot of moving parts. Take out money when you need to.
That's right.
And lo and behold, mom keeps getting older.
That's
and she
right.
falls.
And she falls. And she falls once, goes to the hospital rehab, comes back to assisted living.
Hold on. Time out. So goes to the hospital, there for a little bit, goes to rehab or goes straight back?
So goes to rehab for a little bit.
And Medicare took care of Medicare.
Medicare pays for that. Goes home.
Yeah.
Thinks she's okay to go back home. And then she falls again.
Okay. So, fall once, shame on me. Fall twice, shame on you. Something like that. So this is more
something like that. Right?
Well, we're now. It's not about what's comfortable. It's what's the safest alternative, right?
Right. Because
the priorities are changing.
We had this discussion. We were talking about how assisted living is great because it's your own apartment, but the worry about her falling is just too much, and there's not. You don't have someone with you all the time in assisted living.
And I mean, literally, you can't. One of the requirements for assisted, you got to be able to get from point A to point B. It might be in a wheelchair, but you got to be able to move. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're not necessarily showering you and all that stuff. So a fall risk is a big time fall risk. And, you know, we're just trying to deal with whatever's already going on, right? We don't need our clients to be Olympic athletes. We just need them to not fall, because what ends up happening is that a fall can result in dementia. It's crazy.
It is.
But there could be a significant physical event that triggers a significant cognitive event.
That's right. It can.
So it's a really, like, a fall risk is a really big deal. Mm-hmm. And a fall risk is also something that assisted living wants no part of, because they don't want to get sued if, God forbid, you say, well, you should have done this or that.
Right. And in this case, you know, sometimes when the client falls, they may not want to move out, but this time the mom was on board with it.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm worried that I'm going to fall again. She's like, I realize that I need someone around more often.
So this, you know, you had me with this. This is the normal fact pattern that the broken hip, of course it was a broken hip.
Of course it's a broken hip, right.
But here, mom is like, no, I need, mom's aware and understand.
This may be a little bit out of the ordinary, right? She's on board with this whole plan of moving out of the assisted living to the nursing home.
It's not like other clients are not on board with the nursing home. It's just they don't know what's going on as much because it's more cognitive stuff than it is physical. Mm-hmm. So mom's on board. So they come back in and you're like you again. And they're telling you now it's
time. That's right. Now it's time. So
I have a question.
Yep.
They sold the house and they did assisted living. Does mom have a lot of money that's been outside the trust or is outside the trust?
No, in this case, maybe not typical of our clients. Most of her money was in the trust.
Okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. So you protected a whole bunch.
Right.
And we Ben and I hammered it last week. Mm-hmm. You have to be proactive. It's not enough to just do something once. Mm-hmm. You could save things, but you got to be proactive and then adjust. And so sometimes it's putting more things into the trust.
That's why we want to meet with you at every 5 years or when things change, because at 70, you may want more money outside of the trust than you do at 80.
Right. It's weird. You know, next hour you're going to hear all about having money and growing money and having income streams in your retirement and all that stuff. And that's really important. But at some point, money and income is actually a bad thing. Specifically, when you have long-term care needs, it's like, no, I actually want less income. It's odd.
That's right.
Unnatural. So she's going to qualify for Medicaid. She probably has some money that's outside the trust.
She has some money, but not a significant amount that we can plan with, and now we can apply for Medicaid for her.
And so does the fact that she had a trust and had assets in it, does that make the Medicaid application process easier or harder? I guess maybe it doesn't matter, but because Medicaid is going to want 5 years of everything, right?
It's unnecessary. Yeah. Even though her assets are protected, the application is still just as hard. In fact, we have more accounts, right? Because we have to give them 5 years of the trust accounts as well as 5 years of her personal accounts. And, you know, we think everything is in order. Most of our clients tell us, I didn't make any large gifts. And we don't really know that until we sit down and go through all your financial records.
So, Jamie, people ask us all the time, how exactly do I take money out of the trust? And then we explain it, this partial revocation.
Right.
It's where we need the creator of the trust, the trustee, and the beneficiaries to all sign to memorialize that money's coming out of the trust. And people always are like, well, that is annoying. That seems difficult.
Yes.
I don't like that. And we say, well, it's a small price to protect.
Right.
And they say, well, why do we need to do that? My trustee can go talk to the financial advisor and take money out of the brokerage account. Why do I need this document? Why do I need to go through you? And the answer is because of exactly what you just dealt with. Because the nursing home application is going to say, oh, you have a trust. Let me see all the finances of the trust. And if they see money came out of that trust without the proper paperwork,
right,
they're going to say, this wasn't a real trust. This is substance over form. Mm-hmm. You called it a trust. You treated it like it was your bank account.
Right. And we have sometimes seen people do that, taking money in and out of the trust. And that's not good.
Well, it's possible for Medicaid to say, we're not acknowledging this trust as protecting anything.
Yeah, you're jeopardizing the whole amount you have in the trust.
But so you deal with all this and all the formalities, including dealing with us. It's a nice phone call. I mean, if it's Jane Marie, apparently 50% of people like talking with Jane Marie.
That's
so
true.
It's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But just one phone call and a simple one-page document, a partial revocation, can get whatever amount of money you want out of the trust. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, we want to be involved in that conversation because there have been times where people say, yeah, I know I need to pull out 60 grand because I need to do X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
But really, they could use trust assets directly to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
But we're just doing all this because sounds like they're saving hundreds of thousands of dollars because she did a trust in 96. When she sold the house, she did it the right way.
She only
took out what she needed through a couple partial revocations.
Mm-hmm.
And so the plan's complete. Now, our goal is not for you to be in the nursing home.
No, we don't want that to be.
But if it happens.
But if you have to be there, we've done everything we could to save as much as we could, in my opinion. So
I think that's a great fact pattern.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it happens all the time.
Yeah, this happens all the time. Not as clean as this one necessarily, but it does happen all the time.
Well, it could be that clean, though.
Mm-hmm.
They just, if they're a little more proactive, and what we'd like to, you know, this isn't an, even though we're here every weekend and it sounds like an infomercial for Herzog Law Firm, it's an infomercial for getting prepared and having documents, right? And we happen to not ding everyone every time they call us. Mm-hmm. We don't ding really anyone when they call us. And if you're an existing client, I expect you in every couple years. And I expect you to sometimes forget things and call and ask. Right. And please do. That's never going to be a problem with our firm.
No, I mean, we do it every day, so it, you know, may come naturally to us, but it's okay if you forget what we told you, and you can call us. And
if you forget a bunch of times, we'll just call your kids and tell them. No, I'm kidding. We're not going to do it. So we do have some December seminars coming up. Last week, I thought it was too early to talk about December, but the wind chill is like 2 outside, so it's now appropriate to talk about December. The seminars are about aging in place. The first part of what Jane Marie was talking about, right, when mom is still at home. So getting care in the comfort of your own home or in your kid's home or what have you. On Tuesday, December 10th at 2 p.m., we're going to be in Glens Falls at the Queensbury Hotel. Beautiful Queensbury Hotel, newly redone, 88 Ridge Street. Mm-hmm. Delicious, very, very good cookies. You haven't experienced them, I don't think.
I have not. I've not been there. So
they're very, very good.
The best, I guess.
Whenever there's leftover cookies, we'll bring it back to the office, except for when it's in Queensbury, because I keep them. Wednesday, December 11th at 10 a.m., we'll be at the Courtyard by Marriott in Albany, 1455 Washington Avenue. That's right next to SUNY. And that afternoon at 2 p.m., we're going to be at the Staybridge Suites on 39 Wolf Road. So we're double dipping on Albany. So if you're in the Capital Region, you have no excuse. We'll see you right next to Macy's on the 11th at 2 p.m. at Staybridge Suites. And lastly, Thursday, December 12th, at 2 p.m., we'll be in Saratoga Springs at the Holiday Inn, which is at 232 Broadway. And again, the topic is aging in place. You can come to reserve a seat by calling our office at 518-465-7581 or emailing us at info@herzoglaw.com. And obviously that number, 518-465-7581, is also a great way to schedule a consultation with Jane Marie or myself or Debbie or Harry in any of the three offices. We even do home visits.
I'd say a lot of our visits are home visits.
There's I had a visit and then a document signing where both times family was from downstate. Mm-hmm. And they brought from Queens mm-hmm. black and white cookies.
Oh, those are the best.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's worth it.
Yeah. And in the summertime, mm-hmm. if you have a pool, we'll be there too.
That's right.
So we're going to, I don't know if we have any time for more calls this first half hour. I think we'll get into the second half hour, but we'd love for you to be our caller in the second half hour, 518-476-5900. We'll be right back, with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kpikin.
And this is the second half of the Herzog Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. We are taking your questions about estates, wills, trusts, Medicaid, long-term care, any questions that you have. And you can call in at 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. And we have been talking about, you know, in general, when you're coming back for the holidays and you see your family, what signs to look for is see if your family members who are aging may need some help.
Yeah, I mean, what to do when you're not talking about politics, I think, is what we're talking about.
I think it's a good idea to avoid politics this Thanksgiving for most families.
Although, you know, if your mom is saying that, you know, they should reelect Herbert Hoover, well, then maybe that's a sign.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. But all jokes aside, it really is a really good time to have a little powwow. And as we mentioned, New York Times has a bunch of articles that kind of help you talk about those kinds of things. But we'll talk about that after Susan in Glens Falls asks us a question. Hey, Susan. How are you? Susan?
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Hi, how are you? What's up?
Good. My question is, if you have a property that's in trust, can you just sell that to one of the family members at, like, say, half the price or whatever, and keep that money in the trust without the other individuals signing off on that are named on the trust?
Well, so you had me until you said half the price. So you could sell from the trust to anyone, anytime, right? There's a mechanism to do that. The trustee is the signatory on the deed because the trust owns the property, but that all happens at the insistence and at the direction of the settlor, the client, the person who created the trust to begin with. If you're going to say, well, we're going to do a sweetheart deal and it's, you know, 50% of the price, there technically it's a transfer that's uncompensated. It's a gift. And there's a mechanism to do that. You essentially would do what Jane Marie was talking about in the first half, a partial revocation to essentially memorialize pulling money out of that trust in the form of half the equity of the property. And then it would literally be a gift to that family member. So nuts and bolts wise, it may be a transfer directly from the trust to that family member. But in practice, and if we had a Medicaid application the next day, at least half of that is a gift. And hopefully that property's been in the trust for enough time so that at least some of it's protected. So in general, and I think Jane Marie agrees, whatever the client wants, we can make happen. And so if that's what you want, we can make that happen. However, there are ramifications to it because you can't just give your things away.
So, like, the person that created the trust dies and it's in left, you know, it's for the children, but then the spouse decides to, I guess, gift it or sell it at a reduced value and keeps the money in the trust, and then the individuals later split it three ways, right?
Well, right, but what you just said kind of started with someone passes away. So once the creator of the trust passes away, And if it says the house goes to my daughter, right, it's not split evenly, well, then it's going to the daughter. The daughter could do whatever they want. If the trust says, upon my death, this house is going to be sold to my daughter at blank price, again, no problems there if that's what you wanted. We're more concerned, actually, with the transfers during your life and the impact of gifting during mom's life because what that may mean for Medicaid. But if mom, you know, says this is where this asset goes, this is where that asset goes, or I want, you know, my other kids to be bought out at blank price, whatever you want, we can make that all happen. That's completely fine. Or whatever she wants.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call.
That reminds me of a trust I was looking at yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. So it's an old trust, and it says that on my death, first my children have the opportunity to buy my house at, you know, it was like 75% of fair market value. And then if any of my children don't want it, then my grandchildren have the opportunity to buy the house at this reduced fair market value. And then only if none of my children or grandchildren want it, then it's sold.
I like that because, you know, sometimes clients will say, this child is getting this property. Assuming this child wants that property.
But
that child needs to sell that property if they don't want it.
That's
There's a lot of unintended consequences. I like that there's an option. And I assume that if two of the kids jumped at it and both wanted it at 75%, there'd be something in there that
talked
about
it. Oh, this is interesting. I think the client came up with this. So it said if two children want the house, they are to flip a coin.
Oh, my goodness.
And that if more than two kids want the house, they have to draw straws.
Wow.
So, and they said that was their dad who came up with that.
So it's funny. We just had a seminar in Kingston, and I was just saying to the attendees, you know, we don't do readings of wills. That's like a fiction.
We don't normally, right?
We don't flip coins or draw straws, but apparently sometimes we do.
I really have never seen that written into a trust.
I love it. Well, we have seen, we've actually both been involved in some way, shape, or form in this. We have seen, all right, Dad has a bunch of collectibles, we're going to have an order for how the kids choose who gets what, and it's kind of like a snake draft where, you know, if you have the first pick, you also have the last pick.
Right, we've seen that in drafting into things, right?
And we could do
a chance to pick.
I mean, the caller wasn't calling about this, but literally we can do whatever the client wants. Like you can come up with that language. It's just words, right? So we can come up with all sorts of circumstances, and it becomes a little more involved when we come to camps and lake houses and things like that. Mm-hmm. One of the clients that I met with, they're doing a trust to protect their assets. One of their assets is a vacant piece of land that they use for hunting and just, you know, tooling around on four-wheelers and stuff like that. And they actually do have a separate camp that's on a lake. And they want to protect it for their kids. And we started talking about the grandkids. And I said, well, this is your opportunity to have rules on these assets in the future. Because down the road, when it's your grandkids' families, and they absolutely want the point of the camp for them was for their kids, and now the kids are grown up, their grandkids, to enjoy it and to, you know, way run and do this and do that.
Right.
When all of a sudden it's four sets of grandkids and their families, well, who gets the camp on 4th of July or Memorial Day and all that? Mm-hmm. And so you could actually...
You can draw up rules. Well, you can either do it in a trust or you could do an LLC. But I've done this several times where you have rules. There's 12 weeks in the summer and everyone gets 4 weeks, right?
And yes. So someone will say, well, that's way overdone, right? They're all going to equally enjoy. Okay, great. But one of them moves to Charlotte, you know, for a job, and they rarely are ever at the camp. Are they paying 1/4 or 1/2 of the expenses for something they see 1 week a year? I usually give the, you know, I'm thankful my folks have a place up in Lake George. I go to all the time. My brother does not. He comes up once a week, once a year. Guess what? He can come up and my nieces whenever they want to, but I would never want them to pay half the cost for something they do once.
Right.
You know, so you could kind of work that all out. And
but you're reasonable.
I am reasonable.
You're a very reasonable guy.
Thank you. There's since this is we're on the radio and there's a podcast that comes with this.
Mm-hmm.
I now have a recording of you saying how reasonable I am.
That's
which
right.
Is priceless.
Which we could edit out at any time, Jay Marie.
Ben, please.
Okay.
Please, Ben. You could be our next caller at 518.
That 50 worked right to the middle.
You could be caller number 2-518-476-5900. We mentioned our seminar schedule. We'll talk about that again later on.
You just had a seminar in Kingston this week.
I did.
Right.
And that was on wills versus trust. And that was a really, really good seminar. We had a wide variety of attendees, and some of them had, and I've since actually met with one of them I met with right after, really complicated estate or potential estate. They're still alive, thankfully, but a business, rental property, a lot of wealth and a lot of income that comes with that wealth. However, with the business and with the rental property, there are some partners involved, Jamie, and guess what? If husband dies, there's no clear indication as to where his ownership shares go. And if I'm a partner of that guy, well, I'm a partner with him. He's my business partner. I don't know if I want to be partners with their spouse.
That's right.
At the Herzog Law Firm, if God forbid something happened to me or you.
Right.
Right. Your husband is a doctor. He's not an attorney. He's not going to be an attorney at the Herzog Law Firm. There's a mechanism to deal with it.
That's right.
And one of the things we talked about was the rental property is a shopping center. It's worth a lot of money. How is it going to be that his wife receives money if, God forbid, he passes away? So we talked about things like life insurance.
That's right.
That the entity has on each principal's life. So that way, if there is a death, that life insurance is now the mechanism for buying out the spouse at whatever previously agreed about upon calculation or price or whatever equation. And it's what we do. We don't really talk about it that much, but I know it's one of the things you specialize in. So business succession planning, it's some heavy duty estate planning.
Right. It's very important for business owners because, you know, maybe that husband thinks, oh, I don't have to do anything. My partner is going to be reasonable with my wife and give her what she's due. That may or may not be true.
Sure.
You may not want to realize that.
Well, I could see a scenario where they say, look, we'd love to give you what it says, but there's just no liquid money here. You're going to have to wait. That's You're going to have to wait 10 years until we're able to sell this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife says, okay, well then fine, I'll take 10 cents on the dollar, just be done with it. And that's, I mean, that's not fair.
And you don't want that to happen.
You don't want anyone being taken advantage of, but that stuff happens if you don't have good documents and a good plan. Mm-hmm. By the way, we don't do life insurance, but we know to recommend it.
Life insurance definitely helps in that, but life insurance in conjunction with the buy-sell agreement, because you still have to set a value on the business.
Right.
And that's something people fight about. And we usually work with your CPA to come up with a method to value the business that everyone agrees on while both partners are still alive.
And this isn't just if you have a shopping center. This is if you have any business, right? A lot of our clients are business owners, and they succeeded as business owners. And they took care of their families, and now they have a business, and they don't know what to do with the business. But it may be a really valuable asset. It may not be. I don't know. But you got to have something in line. I don't, you know, a lot of times there are operating agreements for LLCs, small businesses that say that upon the death of a member, it goes to their estate. And I'm like, oh my goodness, we got to avoid probate if nothing else.
That's right.
So when we sit down with you, when you come in and Jane Marie looks at your questionnaire and starts poking around about the business and work and all this stuff, it's because we're trying to find little suggestions to make sure that we're avoiding probate everywhere, that we're protecting assets everywhere, and then we're also protecting your spouse or your kids eventually when there's a death. If it happens to be during the business, though, we got to make sure there's money there. A lot of times business owners are the biggest asset in their business. You know, if you're a sole proprietor, if you pass away, right, well, then the business was you, technically. Yeah, it had a truck or two and, right, and a storefront, but it was really you. So there's a way to kind of get that value out of the business.
And the problem with it going to your estate is if you go to probate, there may not be anyone with the legal authority to run your business.
Yeah.
Until an executor is appointed.
So.
And that could be weeks or months.
We don't want to pick on Ulster County.
No, we don't.
But Ulster County, we're picking on you. Mm-hmm. Probate petitions and administration petitions, Jamie, are taking a really long time down there.
They have a high volume.
And a really long time.
Way behind, right?
Like half a year.
Yes.
6 months plus. Mm-hmm. So it becomes, you know, I will say to people, look, if nothing else, you want to avoid probate because when mom and dad pass away, you want to be able to sell that house pretty quickly if that's what you're going to do. Because if it's November 15th and it feels like February 15th out there, guess what? You're not selling that house until May 15th.
That's right.
And the carrying costs and the taxes and the heating.
And sometimes that's one of the main assets that you're going to get liquidity from. You need the cash to pay off debts and, you know, satisfy bequests, right?
So let me ask you, Jamie. So the seminar I did was wills versus trusts, and you can't do that seminar without talking about, obviously, wills, revocable trusts, and then the Medicaid trust, which I think is always the right move, the Medicaid trust. And there are a bunch of questions about the revocable trust. These are the ones where you're primarily trying to avoid probate. You're dealing with some interesting family situations, perhaps second marriages or what have you. And I always struggle to recommend revocable trusts unless someone is, you know, in their 40s, early 50s, or, you know, because death is a possibility. Life is complicated. We do want to take care of that. How do you deal with revocable trusts? When do you feel like you are recommending them? And at what point do you think you flip the switch to you're now 58 years old, you really should think of Medicaid trusts? Like, how do you look at it?
So revocable trusts, I think of them when you have, like you said, a business or maybe you have rental properties. That's definitely something that goes off in my mind because that's easier to manage in a trust rather than in probate.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to, or do you have just significant assets or assets spread out in many different places, it's easier to have that all owned by your trust so that when you become incapacitated, now your trustee can take over and manage everything, you know, as well as, of course, down the road, it's going to avoid probate for you. A lot of people just want to have avoid probate, you know. They don't want, if they're cutting out a relative, that's another common time we use a revocable trust, so that the relative they're cutting out doesn't have to get notice, you know, that they're being cut out.
So whether it's a revocable trust or the Medicaid trust that we do, and I'm careful not to say irrevocable trust, because one of the main questions we had also was, well, wait a minute, I read irrevocable trust, blah, 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 blah. And that's true for different, you know, it may be true, but it depends on the kind of irrevocable trust.
There's many types of irrevocable trust.
The Medicaid one's a unique one because we're you know, the trust doesn't get taxed. We're kind of still, you're still on the individual level when it comes to you know, capital gains and taxes. What happens if I sell things into trust, et cetera. So be careful when you're Googling out there, because you will read things that go 100% against what we're talking about right now, because you're looking at something that's geared towards protecting your $30 million from estate taxes,
right,
as opposed to your, you know,
Medicaid.
$3 million from Medicaid. So you got to be careful there. But I find that at age 60 plus, that's usually the sweet spot to start thinking about the Medicaid trust. And I don't know if my logic is sound, but I just think, all right, 5-year look back period, 5 plus 60 years old is 65.
Retirement.
So right. sounds about right. But my main point to them is, look, I don't really see a downside to this Medicaid trust. You're still the income beneficiary. You still live in your house. You still pay all the bills and you get all the tax write off. Life is kind of the same. The only difference is you happen to have a trust where you yourself are not the trustee. And statistically, you're going to be in your best health the younger you are. So I just play the numbers. The Medicaid that you had, I don't know how old that young lady is right now, but I know that in 1996, she was 23 years younger. So if she's 90, that means she did it when she was 67. I mean, I applaud her. That's amazing.
That's good to do it that young, right?
That being said, if you're 87, you could still do it. And one of the things I mentioned at the seminar was, I said, look, the oldest person I've done a Medicaid trust for is 98. And it's not because we convinced her she's going to live till 103. It was because the trust has immediate benefits for the Care at Home program. And so it's not just 5 years, and if you didn't do it when you were young, you're kind of, it's not worth doing now. There's always a good reason, because if nothing else, if you never need long-term care ever, at least you avoid probate,
right?
Which in Ulster County is a big deal now.
That's right. So yeah, I've done Medicaid trusts for all different ages, right?
Yeah.
You know, and certainly if you think of it as you can start with a trust and add assets into it over time, there's definitely no reason not to start when you're younger. Start with your house, right? Put your house in a trust.
Your most illiquid asset, right?
That's
the thing that's going to go through probate. And then as you get older, you put more in.
Then you can add more assets later on if you want to. So there's no downside to doing that.
Sometimes you need to dip your toe in the pool. And although I think it's colder when you go in slowly. That's my theory.
You just like jump right in.
I think it's better.
I'm kind of a...
If you're entering a pool.
A wader, you know.
Oh.
Wade in gently. Yeah.
Ben?
I look at it like you have that one shock value, and then you're good.
I agree.
So I just jump right in.
Especially when it gets right to your waistline.
Exactly.
Give me a break.
Yep. Got to jump right in and get
it
over with.
This is how you get sick, Jane Marie. This is what happens. You wade into pools.
I wade into pools. I know.
We still have time for a couple calls. 518-476-5900. We did mention we have these seminars coming up in December, in between the holidays. And as we kind of started the program, the busiest time for clients' children calling us is absolutely the week after Thanksgiving and the week after New Year's.
That's
because,
right.
Or even between Christmas and New Year's, because they're seeing stuff. You know, they say, if you see something, say something.
That's right.
That applies to New York City subways and safety as well as... As well as estate planning.
That's the airport, I thought.
That's everywhere. That was like the MTA had that. If you see something, say something.
That's right.
But it's kind of the truth, because... being proactive saves so much more money than being reactive in our field. And it's the same. Look, it's the same when it comes to retirement planning. It's the same when it comes to a lot of, you know, you're taking care of your house. If you start to see a leak, you deal with it as opposed to waiting until the bathtub fell through the ceiling, for example. And in that analogy, for us, the earlier we can get the clock ticking, the earlier we could ensure you're avoiding probate and at least saving money there, you kind of can't go wrong with it.
It's also a good time, like, for out-of-state children who are visiting. Sometimes I'll have meetings where the parents will bring them in, which is great, because they just want them to know what their estate plan is. And
right.
They want them to meet the lawyers who are going to be going down the road. So just to have the children involved in the plan. That's fine. Yeah.
As long as there's communication, I don't think you can go wrong. We do have a caller, Tina in Scotia. How are you, Tina?
I'm fine, thank you.
What's up?
We have a trust, and I have the house for sale, but it isn't selling. So the realtor is saying we should rent it.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering, they want us to fill out a New York rental agreement?
Like a lease?
Yeah, sort of, like...
Or a listing agreement to rent it.
Yeah, probably that's what it is.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering about filling it out and what we should do.
Okay. Well, so remember, your trust owns the property, so it would be a good idea for either the trustee and or you, because you're the life tenant on the property, to agree to it being rented out. In terms of the inner workings of the trust, you're the income beneficiary of the trust, which means that you're entitled to those rents. Okay, so even if you're not living there, those rents are going to come your way. And then perhaps, you know, in the spring or whenever the market's better, you could sell that home. So, yeah, sounds good. I mean, the trust allows you to do whatever you want to do.
Okay, so I can fill out this form without checking with anyone. I wasn't sure.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think you should maybe have someone take a look at that if you're confused by any of the provisions, to make sure that, you know, sometimes... Jane Marie, there'll be a provision that says if the tenant ends up wanting to buy your house, right, there's some jacked up commission perhaps that broker gets. So you may want someone to look at it, but from the standpoint of, is there a problem renting a piece of property in a trust? There's no problem there.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call.
Welcome.
We do have another caller, Tom in Clifton Park. How are you, Tom?
Yeah. Good morning. Did I hear you correctly saying that the Medicaid trust does not protect against assisted living expenses?
Yes, so there are not many assisted living facilities that accept Medicaid. I mean, so if you did find one that accepts Medicaid, yes, then that trust would protect the assets. The problem is just that there's probably two or three facilities in the capital area where the assisted living accepts Medicaid.
Trust. And you have to go into assisted living, or you go into assisted living. You don't have to go into a nursing home. Can you withdraw those funds? Let's say you put your house in the Medicaid trust. Can you withdraw those funds to pay for assisted living?
Yes, you can. You can do a partial revocation of the trust, and then you can decide on a lump sum of money to take out, and then you use that money to cover your assisted living expenses over the next couple months.
Okay.
We were talking about is you don't want to take out too much money at one time, because whatever money you take out is now unprotected, you know, until you spend it.
Oh, so it'd be better to do less money and do maybe more partial revocations?
Yes, yeah, less money more frequently, that's right.
And does the remaining money, if you do take a partial revocation, does the remaining money, if you haven't met, let's say, your five-year look back, does that continue on?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that continues on towards that five-year mark, and then, right, once you hit that five-year mark, the money that's left in the trust is still protected.
So if you took its second revocation, then it would protect what's left after you withdraw the second time.
No, the time starts running from the initial time you put the asset into the trust.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. But then if you take the revocations, then it's only the remaining balance that keeps earning.
That's right.
Okay. Okay, you've answered both my questions. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Bunch of good callers at the end here.
Yeah, good questions.
You know, he touched on a really good point, and or at least triggered, I think, is a good point in my brain, which is Medicaid doesn't care if you spend money on things. So you don't need to partially revoke just for assisted. You could partially revoke for anything. And we just can't have you gifting money around. So if you're taking money out and you're going to spend it on home improvements, that sounds great. In fact, a lot of times when people come in and mom's got a foot in the nursing home, we may take money outside of the trust and use it to improve the real estate that's inside the trust.
That's true. Well, number one, to help mom still live there, right? Ramps and handicap accessible bathrooms. Or if you're not even going that direction, you can improve the house to get it ready for sale.
Yeah. Right. Look, mom's responsibility is to pay for all the upkeep of the house. So let's get new windows in there or a new boiler. And that may increase the sales price down the road for something that's already been protected.
That's right. That helps out.
We do have these December seminars coming up. I think we got about a minute here, so I'll kind of speed through them. Tuesday, December 10th at 2 p.m., we're going to be in Glens Falls at the Queensbury Hotel. Wednesday, December 11th at 10 a.m., Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Avenue in Albany. Later on that afternoon, we'll be at the Staybridge Suites in Albany, 39 Wolf Road. That's December 11th, Wednesday. And then Thursday, December 12th at 2 p.m., we'll be in Saratoga Springs at the Holiday Inn. If you'd like to see it at one of those seminars again on aging in place, the number to call is 518-465-7581, or you could email us at herzoglaw.com. I think it's a great seminar for getting, you know, kicking the tires on what it takes to keep mom or dad or your loved one at home.
A lot of people come who, you know, have a trust and they just already, but they want to learn more about this. It's something people still aren't that aware of, that you can get Medicaid and stay at home.
And it's funny, and New York State and your family doesn't want you in a nursing home, and this program can help keep you at home.
Come learn about that. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.